Welcome to the BFM Historical Society, Andrew Black.
Is this thing on? We've got my... just have the... Rick, help!
Memo to tech.
I am Andrew Black, wanker.
I want to start at the beginning.
I was kind of into music when I was about 10 or 11, and then it just sort of lost me somewhere. And then I went to Saturday Night Fever, the best film ever, and... thought, oh, yeah, that was all cool, but yeah, you know, everyone was learning the Brooklyn Hustle, except me. And then suddenly I heard the Sex Pistols, and the whole world changed. There was something I could relate to. Yeah, this was high school, like fourth form. And then, yeah, listening to Barry Jenkins late night and sort of surreptitiously at boarding school. Oh, it seemed so rebellious. And then BFM, yeah, that was just sort of, it was going, but not terribly much. This was, 1978? Yeah, or 1979 maybe. And it was going, but yeah, sort of by the time I got to seventh form, BFM was on all term time for the whole term. So we used to listen to it, and then Barry Jenkins at night. And then I went away to Massey University. And a friend of mine was doing Radio Massey, and I met the station manager at a party. And I said, wow, shit, I'd really love a go at that. And I was sitting on Phil's show sort of the next week, and my name's Maxine. She walked in and said, oh, you wanted a show, didn't you? How about next Tuesday at 10? Yeah, okay. What do I do? What sort of training, you know? I said, I'll just turn up and out, you know, a bit early. There'll be somebody there. They'll show you what to do. I turned up early, and the guy said, oh, glad to hear. Got to go to a lecture. Bye. So he showed me roughly how it worked, and I queued up my first record. I won a real long song, Lou Reed, I think, oh, Sweet Jane or something of Transformers. It's like 7 minutes long. Queued it up, put it on, and it started. I said, oh, phew, I can do this. And it had been going for like 2 minutes. Suddenly the phone rang, and his voice said, is this on the right speed? Because Lou hadn't sung, it was on 45 instead of 33.
And also, if you start, this was around about 81 or 82, something?
No, like? Shit, no, it was 83 by now.
Right.
83 by now. And yeah, I had a great time at Massey, but failed all my papers and got kicked out. Came back to Auckland and missed it. And I had to do penance and go to ATI at night school for flunking out of university. And I played hooky and come in at BFM, and Chris Forster was on air. Oh, and I had a little bit of a... said, do you fancy it? And Chris said, oh, fuck yeah. So we had a... And I hung around and sort of came back the next week, and then a week later I met Chris Hester, who was the program director, and it blagged a show. And, oh, yeah. Well, they were a bit vulnerable with a... Yeah. The first show I ever did was a live music special because I had a whole bunch of bootlegs, and then sort of graduated. And I think I was one of the first person to get a regular show because you did one and then booked the next one. But I always forgot when I'd booked one. I needed a routine, or I just couldn't make it. So I insisted, you know, that I had a regular one. And it was Friday, 7 till 10, Wednesday, 7 till 10 at night for quite a while.
And, well, what year was that?
84, 85, probably by 85 I had a once a week show. Yeah, 84, yeah, I started doing shows on BFM, yeah. And then I wanted to play rugby, and you needed to stay home on a Friday night, really. And I wanted something to make me feel good about my Friday night because everyone else was having such fun. I thought, oh, I know, I'll move radio to Friday. Then I'll sort of go home, have an early night, and feel good to play rugby the next day. And it never worked once.
It didn't work.
No, not once. But I did it, both of them, really, for 16 years. Yeah, maybe even, I think it was about 19 years non-stop.
You did Friday at night, and then the rugby game on Saturday.
Yeah, but except the promoter would hear your name, and they'd ring up and say, Andrew mentioned my gig, I'll put your name on the door. Oh, righto, cool. And it gets, you know, 2-3 in the morning, and I'd start arguing with myself, and eventually I'd ruin Friday night so much because arguing with myself I'd go home, but by then I'd usually ruin rugby on Saturday as well. Well, maybe we'll have to start with the Sex Pistols because they really were responsible. And Johnny. And all... when I first started, we broadcast four in the afternoon until one in the evening, only during turn time. And then we added weekends, then we added breakfast. So we did 7 till 10 and then 4 in the afternoon till 1 in the morning. At one point, Simon Lahn sold the breakfast show to Radio Hauraki. That was interesting. It was going to be because they were on AM and we were on FM and Hauraki wanted it. And then we got weekends and then finally we didn't have to stop at the end of the holidays. I think we got the middle two holidays first, and then finally we didn't have to shut down over Christmas, and it sort of just grew and grew. It became this monolith.
And there were heaps of shows available then too. Once it got to Christmas and lots of people were going away on holiday, there were like heaps of shows up for grabs.
Yeah, I went to Fridays and it sort of became, this is the weekend, let's go. Yeah, shit, I spent years wanting to be Barry Jenkins, even trying to be Barry Jenkins. I was horrified when I heard it, when I hadn't heard it for 10 years, to suddenly discover I was Jason Gunn. Yeah, finally I heard it, you know, and oh, God, it's Jason. Who let Jason Gunn on my radio show? I couldn't believe it. And this was sort of, you know, that's what it sounded like to me. You never like the sound of your own voice. People accuse me of slurring and mumbling a lot, but I discovered towards the end, when I started getting it recorded for me quite a lot and listening to it, that if you played it at the volume that it was meant that the Lord and I designed it to be heard, which was like right around at 10, and that's how loud it was in the studio, you had to have the vocals quite quiet because otherwise I would be shouting in your lounge at what sounded like the top of my voice. It was me adjusting, you know, just to how loud the music had been in my headphones. I turned it down and it sounded like it was mumbling, especially when you talk over the music. It was stupid. Yeah, well, I decided that only John Peel really got paid money to play loud, unpopular rock music on the radio. And it was highly likely I was ever going to make any money at it. And the thought of doing commercial radio horrified me. And so I always kept my day job. This was, you know, pretty much the pinnacle for me. I didn't want to play crap songs on the radio, and I wanted to be able to choose and try and play the best possible music I could find to play at any time. Just to humour. It's all the program directors, just keep them off my case, and you could sort of try and, you'd hide it, you know, and amongst a whole bunch of good songs. I don't listen to the radio much. It makes me cross. No, you shouldn't. I started shouting at it. And as Josh Kronfeld said about the guy that played in his jersey for Otago after he retired, well, it's not quite me, is it? It's funny how, you know, it grew and grew. At one point, it was nearly 10% of the radio audience for the whole of Auckland. Sadly, they thought they could keep it like that. They didn't realise that people would move in and sort of cut you out of your turf. And it took a long time to build up that talent pool that we had at one point.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of stars. Yeah, well, we had so many stars, it was ridiculous. It was a sort of an accident of fate in a time machine. I mean, it's partly Mikey's fault. He was the one that convinced us that we were radio stars in the first place. I don't think until Mike, anyone occurred to them that they were a radio star.
Oh, no, I'm sure. I actually think Marcus Lash and Graham Hill and Paul Cassidy, all those guys in their time were radio stars.
They were, but they didn't think they were. We hadn't convinced Auckland that they were. Whereas, and I mean, I bought into it as enthusiastic as everybody else. You know, we acted like radio stars a lot all over Auckland. It was great. Unfortunately, all the next generation thought that they were radio stars too, when they possibly weren't next. And then somebody made the decision to pay them. And then you got radio stars with vested interests. Well, once you start paying people to do something for money, it becomes prostitution. It's just a matter of how much are you paying and what are they selling. And, you know, the decision should be made for what's best for the station, not what somebody's income's got. It's a door to get you places, you know.
Yeah.
It sets you up. It's not a job, or just gives you the chance. Yeah, it's frightening where you see BFM people, isn't it?
I know.
I mean, Stephen Joyce, who's the Minister of Transport and possibly the Minister of Broadcasting, was on Radio Massey with me. He was station manager the year after I left. And now he's the national... Not all of them in probably the greatest of directions, but he'd have to think he'd at least understand. Whereas you wonder that Bill English or John Keynard... Okay, sorry, we'll go and talk to someone else. Fine. Some of us hang around, some of us hang around for far too long, probably, Dubhead. Some of us are still here and some of us probably wish they still were. Well, there's been times where the whole thing has been less than honest. And I think even the listeners pick up on that. You know, BFM should be 100% truthfully honest with the listeners, with themselves, you know, about to each other. And it hasn't been, and that kind of shows, and you can hear it. People are so trying. My God, they try me every day, Dubhead. Every day. It becomes like the Labour Party, you know. It's not that different to the other guy. Earnest attempt. At one stage, during one of the recent Mafia sort of management things, I had an on-air check. And
all right, 2006.
Yeah. It's where they drag you in and play you all the bits out of your show, all your voice breaks, and review them. So I got told something like to say my name more. I thought if you didn't know. And secondly, kind of, it got to the stage where some of them said their names every single voice break, and I was just, look, you don't have to do that. I was kind of deliberately, I've always been a bit reactionary. Deliberately not saying my name, so to be told, that was kind of annoying. And then they didn't know that the VU meter levels didn't work when you had the main mic on. So, because turn up your volume, please, on your voice breaks. I said, well, I don't know how loud to turn it. There's no level. There's no level? Which I thought was brilliant. They didn't know that didn't work. And... they asked me what I thought was wrong with the station. And I said, well, it's just a bit Helen Clark, really. Sort of safe socialist, you know. You know, that's not really alternative anymore. It just kind of, they're all so soft. They were, what did John Stewart say about Barack Obama? It's like they've changed Darren, but it's still bewitched. And, yeah, Helen, you know, John Key, it's a bit like we've got John Key instead of Helen Clark, but it's still bewitched. I mean, take a risk, you know. Find the really great song. Not the average one, the great one. What are you playing that for? Cheer up. Tell me a joke.
Oh, thank you, says the great queen, like a la-di-da poofter.
You know, make people laugh. Most of them are miserable most of the time. Yeah.
Some of the DJs are very funny.
Good. Good, thank God.
And the guys that write the ads are still funny as well.
Yeah, well, it's been one of its great strengths. Yes. That has been consistently good, I must admit.
Yeah.
I mean, but those guys take risks. Some of them just bomb. You know, some of those ads, oh my God, what were they thinking? But... unless you take that risk and risk the one that bombs, you're never going to do the real good ones, you know. I think we have to have a joy division. They changed the world the way the world made music twice. Once with Joy Division and then once with New Order. And I can't think of anyone else to say that about. Fuck you, Troy. Fuck you, Troy. Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. It's quite hard to beat that.
Where them use you for their own ends. To the center of the city in the night, waiting for you. To the center of the city in the night.
Caius, because Josh Homme's the Ginger Elvis, and just the music he makes is so interesting and fantastic and wonderful, and because the song's got a noise in it, like someone playing a jumbo jet. It does need to change constantly. It has to evolve. Yes. I always thought it was a terrible mistake that people got stuck doing the specialist shows. Because originally a specialist show was on 10 to 1 at night when there was three people and a dog listening. And so to have anybody to hear your show, you had to move to hopefully a drive show or ultimately breakfast, just because, you know, it was the only way to get more than five people to hear you. And people learned how to be radio DJs doing specialist shows. And then they graduated to drive or whatever. It was how you worked through being a bad radio announcer and developed personality and enunciation and how to press all the buttons without freezing and stuff. And then you moved. And that was sort of how the station got better. At a certain point, that talent developing tool got blocked. And people got stuck there because they liked doing it. And I always thought that was a terrible shame. And that was one of the ways that the station survived and where people came from. You know, Slave and Atis came from hip-hop and Marcus came from talkback late at night. So did Nick D. And, I could go on, but I'm getting tired. Yeah, and that's those names spring to mind. And yeah, that got taken away, and they get 2 hours, you know, twice a week. 2 hours isn't long enough to do a radio show. It's like meat, no potatoes. It doesn't go anywhere. You're just getting momentum, and it's time to go.
2 hours is fine. I've done 2 hours.
Ah, but you do a specialist show.
Yes, it's a specialist show. That's right.
It's different. That is entirely 3 hours of specialist shows that drive people to drink. Especially yours.
Steady on. I only do two.
But you know, they get 2 hours twice a week to develop. It's very difficult to develop as a radio presenter, and it's much harder for talent to sort of develop at the station now, I think. And there's also pressure for it to be good sort of straight away. You know, it's not like you can practice when there's no one listening, because there are no times. I don't know I'd ever been allowed on. Well, no. It's evolved and it's changed, and those people have come through, and there's been jobs and opportunities. It's interesting with the internet, what's going to happen now. I was badgering them about sort of using the internet and expanding what BFM done 3, 4, 5 years ago. And they've just, you know, radio, TV won't make it to 100 as we know it. Radio will, but, you know, not much further. And I think that they've kind of stuck their head up their ass and just carried on being a radio station, which becomes less and less relevant as time goes on. And, yes, they have a presence on the internet, but it's not what it could or should be, I think. So, yes, I wish them the very best for the next 40 years. I really do. It's a shame that I don't do radio because it stops me listening.
Yeah,
in fact, true. It interferes playing music even, because you start, it's weird. I start sort of announcing between tracks. I can't help myself. And thinking, oh, this would sound really good with that next to it. Or, God, you could play this and say that. And it drives you bananas. I've brainwashed myself, Dubhead.
Drives you bananas. Well, you did for a little while there get involved in DJing.
Oh,
here and there, sporadically.
I sucked as a club DJ, and I hated working when everyone else was having fun. I couldn't stand it, or having to stay straight and sober long enough to play.
Yeah.
Oh, it was no fun at all. And besides, I decided I was famous enough. Somebody else could be famous for doing that. I still got him for free. It didn't matter.
Yeah, unnecessary pressure.
Yeah, I tried. I made a pilot for a TV show once about what New Zealanders do to have fun in the weekend. And we went to the rodeo, and I rode a rodeo bull. And the bastard set me up with this bull that had won best bull at the Nationals 2 years before. But it was like they'd announced it 5 times on the TV during the day, and I can't back out. If you kill me, you'll be the ones on the front page of the papers, you wankers. And so I had to go out. It was called Tag It, this bloody thing. It's a good TV show too, much better than most of the shit that's on the telly. Oh, yes, well, shit, okay. Yeah, well, it's time to play another song. You're right, Dubhead. These guys I played more than any other band in the whole time. And it's She Hut. What a back catalogue, eh? We'll be right back. was such tremendous fun. My God. And, yeah, I got to meet so many cool people and interview just about anybody I ever wanted to. Nick Cave, New Order, The Fall, Hunters and Collectors, Stacey Pullen, oh, God, all sorts of loads of New Zealand bands. Yeah, I've had my own corporate box at the Big Day Out. I've downscaled to only a table now. And, well, for years I had that radio ad for my show that went, "I am Andrew Black, wanker."
Yes.
And every year somebody on the Andrew Black table, underneath Andrew Black, they write, "wanker." There were some interesting side effects of that. I remember going up to see Peter and Bevan at a nice and early BFM gig at St. James. I think it might have been New Year's Eve. It was a BFM gig, I remember. They were on BFM. And Peter grabs the mic, "Ladies and gentlemen, Andrew Black," and they'll go, "Hey." Sort of, I don't know, a couple hundred people dancing hard out. And I look down in the front row and there's four guys going, "Wanker, wanker," and punching the air in time. Yeah, that was humour.
Yeah.
Oh, Mikey Havoc and I being the grumpy old men at the St. James up in the box from the Muppets with microphones. Absolutely out of our gourds. Shouting advice at each other and at the crowd from up in the one of those little boxes. Yep.
Microphone cutting out on guest mic in Studio 3, Rick.
I did manage to put the station off air in numerous ways.
Oh, really?
Oh, I was locked out. My dog ripped the plug out of the wall that had pretty much everything plugged into it. Sort of destroyed, broken, spilt. Forgotten. Yes, it was fun. Oh, well. No fun. Didn't Iggy write? I'm sure Iggy definitely did.
There we go. Bleak vision of the future from Andrew Black. No fun. That's the future for BFM.
Wow, my God. It's not me. It's you that's bringing up all this. Stop it. Stop it. You're depressing me. I thought it was a happy place. It's a happy place, Dubhead.
It is a happy
place. Maybe you should get out more.
No, it is.
Come on.
Look, I have a really good time here. Every time I'm here, every week, I love it.
Shall I tell the story about you in the toilets?
I have a damn good time. Oh, no, I don't know about
Come
that
on. Now, what happens in the toilets, Patrick? What happens? Tell us.
Yes, well.
Honest? Come on, honest, now.
We all know what happens in the toilets, Andrew Black. We don't need to talk about that on the interview.
That's right. It's where you go to act like a proper radio DJ. You can't do it in the studio anymore. Have to go into the toilets to act like a proper radio DJ. I'll never forget Mikey Havoc saying that once on the radio. Missing the end of a song, slamming the mic on and go, "Sorry about that, everyone. Andrew Black and I just acting like proper radio DJs."
Yeah.
Exactly. Him and I had tremendous fun, my God. He did 4 till 7 on Fridays and I did 7 till 10. And it got like him and I did 6 till 8. And we were just these naughty, impudent, loudmouth, smart ass.
Very bad.
Oh, yes, but we had tremendous. And we amused ourselves tremendously. We thought we were hilarious. And we probably were quite funny.
You don't do a show at BFM anymore?
No.
When did that finish up?
About 18 months ago, I suppose. After about 19 years, I had 2 years off.
Yep.
So 20 years would be 84, so... 2004. 2003. I probably had 2004 and 2005 off. And yep. Then did 06, 07, something like that. I quit. I had a hissy. But, I mean, I never told them this. I had been looking to quit, sort of. When I turned 30, I was going to quit the radio show and quit playing rugby. And I turned 30 and looked around and went, no. And I decided that while I could still push them around playing rugby, I was entitled to do the Friday night show. And then, I can't remember. A few years ago, I was 38, I dislocated my shoulder playing rugby. And played once more the next year and then never again because the doctor sort of... I went to leave his office and I said... Well, he went to show me out and I said, "So rugby's out then." And I went... Well, he went... Blah, 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 blah. I said, what about? And he shut the door and gave me another 10-minute lecture. Oh, okay. So rugby was out. And so, yeah, I didn't feel that I couldn't push them around when I played rugby with them. I wasn't allowed to do the Friday nights anymore. So, yeah, then I had a couple of years off and then came back and did Saturdays from 4 till 7 for maybe 3 years. It was like Friday night, but for old people.
Yeah.
And, I found the music and stuff was different. And, yeah, but I kind of deliberately changed the whole pace of it and it wasn't sort of hyping, yeah. Did it sort of different, changed the style, made it more lakey, especially sort of in the summertime, you know, sort of dubby and trippy and sort of, well, all over the shop. I was always all over the shop. I like to play all the genres except country.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the only test of how good it is, is how it sounds in 20 years' time. If it still sounds, oh, yes, that's good, yeah, then you can probably be sure. But there's a lot of stuff that only sounds good now. Yeah, I thought I was slightly slow on picking up on things like the fall or hip hop or dance music or lots of kind of I didn't like Caius for a while, all sorts of ones that but yeah, then I adopted them enthusiastically to my soul. I found that if there was enough people making a noise about something, that it was probably worth going sticking your nose in with an open mind and see what's going on. And so, I did.
But what happened?
What happened when?
Well, we're talking on the timeline. We're still
Saturday
evenings.
Saturday evenings.
Great time slot. What did you say, 4 till 7?
Yeah, 4 till 7. I had an argument with management, really. That did involve smoking pot in the studio. And narcs, nasty little narcs. And AUSA and all sorts of... They tried to con us that AUSA had banned BFM from smoking pot, which AUSA is actually powerless to do.
No, they had banned everyone from smoking inside the building. And AUSA owns the building, so they can say no one can smoke in this building.
Yes.
Anything.
But we've been allowed to smoke pot in here for 30 years, Dubby.
No.
And
but they're allowed to.
30 years.
It is their building. They are allowed to say, nah, can't do it.
No, because we're a tenant.
It's a workplace.
They're a tenant. We have a right to quiet enjoyment as a tenant. And they've got no right to stick their nose in here without applying in writing to come in 7 days. So, and besides, you can call what are they called? SRC. This is how we changed the structure of BFM. We called an SRC because no one can stack an SRC. And an SRC is like a special general meeting. BFM could stack it and have a vote of no confidence in the student association and have them thrown out in 3 weeks and they would be powerless to do anything about it. Because, I mean, for years we had a rule. They don't mess with us because we don't mess with them. And there's stupid student politics. We don't have to bow to them for a second. We could get 10,000 people, have them voted off by next Wednesday.
There's still the landlord, and the landlord says you can't smoke in my house.
But
and
we
you can't
say to
smoke
the
cigarettes or pot in my house. Then the landlord can do that.
The landlord doesn't have to enforce it. And no, the landlord can't do that because we're a tenant.
The landlord can. He can say I don't allow smoking in my dwelling. He can.
Well, we just changed the landlord. Throw them out. We call the SRC, get them voted off.
We're a building on a university campus, and all workplaces on university have to be smoke-free. It's legislation.
I mean, that's not really... I didn't really even care about that.
It's true.
The argument was them lying to us.
Oh.
My argument was with the station manager lying, because they decided that. It hadn't come from them at all. They had decided that without talking to anybody about it. And just said, we're going to do that. And I went, hey. No.
You said, yeah, stuff it. I deserve the right to be able to smoke pot.
No. I just wanted them to tell us the truth. I didn't care. It's not that important to me.
And what was the truth?
They decided themselves.
No smoking tobacco.
Yes.
Or otherwise.
It had been decided in the corner or the... The station manager's office here. without, you know, it was a unilateral decision from two staff members.
Smoke-free environments act meant that people work here.
Yeah, but it, you can't. Dubhead, we were never allowed to smoke pot in here.
That's right.
It's illegal.
I know.
We've done it for 30 years. That's ridiculous. It's a stupid argument.
Well, cigarette. It's supposed to be because the place where people work should be safe for them, so it has to be smoke-free.
Oh, fuck off!
And it's because people
what
work here.
What a load of bullshit!
It is. It's the smoke-free work
environment.
There was
no one here. There was no one here. It's always been illegal. We knew we were breaking the law every time we did it.
So essentially,
why should we suddenly care?
So essentially, this was what you were having a hissy fit about.
I was having a hissy fit because they decided without discussing it with us.
I don't know.
If the station had made a stand against that law for 30 years, why should it change now? Well, honestly, when a 40-year-old ex-King's boy with a vacuum bag business is the most subversive threat you face, you're pretty fucking lame if you ask me. I mean, I'm sorry. But if that's the most derisive influence in the station, then they're pathetic.
So you said, stuff is, I'm out of here.
No, I got fired.
For repeat offending.
No, once, as far as I know. It was really for arguing with them. I just wanted them to tell. I didn't care. If the bulk of the station thought it was a good idea not to smoke pot up here, then I was fine with that. That wasn't what the real issue was. The issue for me was that they lied.
Lied to you?
Well, lied to all of us. You know, you go to those DJ meetings, how many? 50, 60? You know, they lied to the whole bunch of us. And, you know, that's what I was talking about before, about the honesty of it. You know, shouldn't we play bands that might have smoked pot? Or mentioned drugs? I mean, that counts everybody out, including the bloody Beatles. What would we play? Name one.
Well, I think, I'm sure they're just saying that's the rules.
But it's just them being Nazis. That's not how the station works.
Excellent.
Between you, me, and Stinky Jim, we must have 50, 60 years of radio experience. Someone fresh out of journalism school or broadcasting school at the university who's only just started shaving with their degree, who gets a paid job here, who spent probably hasn't even been on. How are they to decide? How do they know what's best for the station compared with 60 years of three grumpy old fools? The combined wisdom of all the various genres of BFM is far greater than any idiot they could pay to come and work here.
But you know, new people are on the radio, new people are listening to the radio. New people are now in charge of the Students Association.
That's because they add to the collective wisdom of BFM. The new people, it requires change constantly, of course.
But not a change in the smoking rules.
No, they can change that, but they never asked. It was, you know, two people that had been at BFM for less than 4 years between them. How do they make decisions on how the station's acted for over 30 years with no harm to anyone?
So, you're pissed.
At them? Oh, no, dumbhead. It's not worth worrying about that. I'm not that worried if I never do another radio show. It's not like I haven't done it.
Oh, well, any last thoughts? Naturally, anything you want to put down?
Anything I want to put down.
I mean, you've kind of had a good say. You've got a lot off your chest.
No, I haven't. It's not... It's a band called Hard Knocks, English outfit, and it's called Attitude, because, yeah, I got an attitude. And it's kind of modern but hard, and it's got all the technology, and it's interesting, and it's innovative, and it must be 7 years old, and it still sounds quite cool. And it genre meshes, and I always thought, no boxes. There's just one big genre, except country. Cheers.
attitude. I had an attitude.
What are you gonna do now? What are you gonna do now? What are you gonna do now?
Yeah, I had an attitude.
You brought it.
Yeah, I had an attitude. I had an attitude. I went through my thing. That's the bottom line.